Rene with Blast Furnace Radio. And today we have with us Malik, who is part of Common Grounds. And we have been looking forward to meeting him here in New Orleans. We're talking to Malik before a press conference about the future of the work of Common Grounds.
Good morning.
So, Malik, tell us.
Now, wait a minute. You're going to have to hold it.
Okay, I'll hold it.
All right.
So, Malik, why don't you talk to us about when you were young and started to become active?
My activism started in basically, I believe it was in 61, no, about 62 or 63. I saw a very courageous hero of mine, Reverend Avery Alexander, sit at a counter in the New Orleans City Hall's cafeteria. And for that, he was dragged off the counter. He was jerked off the counter, dragged up the stairs. I believe it was two or three flights of stairs to the mayor's office. And then after they talked to the mayor about that he had the nerve to go into this counter, he was dragged in back down the stairs. The only reason why this was happening is because he was black. And at that time, it truly opened my eyes to just how blatant the racism is. And I knew that I had to make a choice. You know, so my activism basically started then. Now, my awareness. Now, my activism started in 1970 when I joined the Black Panther Party.
Now, when you joined the Black Panther Party, what city were you in?
Right here in New Orleans.
Oh, you were in New Orleans. And tell us about the Black Panther chapter here.
The party was started here by a person named Steve Green, who came down under the direction of Geronimo Pratt from L.A. to organize a chapter, to organize, not necessarily a chapter, but to organize. And Steve came down with 200 papers. He met two brothers, and from there they started selling the papers, just going out and making awareness. I found out that they was doing this maybe about a month and a half after they started. And that's when we started what was known as the NCCF, a National Committee to Combat Fascism. We started that around March. You know, and
did you have a breakfast program?
We had a tremendous breakfast program. We had a program, someone that we used to feed 300 to 400 kids. You know,
remember what people used to say about that?
You know, but I tell you what, you know, for the kids who had that breakfast, for the families that was able to have that savings, that they no longer had to buy a breakfast item, so I gave them a chance to buy something else. Our crime abatement program, you know, made the community the desire, which was once classified as the most dangerous housing project in the country, into one of the safest. Our sickle cell awareness, you know, truly brought awareness to this city. There's just so many things, you know, I could say about the things that we did as in those early days of activism, because most of it is relating to what I'm doing now.
So why a lot of people have gone on to their brilliant careers and cashing in on their popularity from the 60s, you haven't, so why not?
I didn't get in this. I didn't get involved in the struggle for peace and justice to capitalize on it. I got involved in the struggle for peace and justice to make it happen. To fight. This is a war, a war against injustice. And I hope and I pray that it continue to be a nonviolent war. Because I don't believe you can have justice, through violence.
There's a lot of talk about violence and revolutionary violence and class war, and it goes on and on and on, and I'm sure you're surrounded by this talk.
Well, I wasn't part of it. I was entrenched in it. As a member of the Panther Party, we was armed. We advocated self-defense. And one of the most greatest and profound events that ever happened in my life, one of them, happened when the police came to raid our office and the community surrounded our office. And that's men in public housing surrounded our office and told the police, here in the deep south, that you will not raid this office. And they did it in the act of nonviolence disobedience, because they was trying to tell them to get out the way. And they stayed. And I'm not talking about 10 or 20 or 100 or 200. I'm talking about between 2,000 to 3,000, And they surrounded our office. And, it let me know, because I knew a shootout was going to happen, and I just figured I'd go ahead on and let them come. They'll probably kill us and we'll kill some of them, but that's not justice. That could be revenge, but that's not justice. Because every act of violence, it's going to be just to the winner and unjust to those who is being victimized by it. So there's no justice in it, and without that, it could be no peace. It's definitely no peace. And so again, these are the things that happened then. I believe that everything that I've endured in the 36 years that I've been involved in the struggle for peace and justice, it haven't been a capitalizing, but I tell you what, it's been a glorious experience, because I believe I've been blessed to meet some of the greatest people that I would want to meet in my lifetime.
Fast forward 35 years, and now the children of the people that we were fighting have come from all over the country. I mean, people are doing stuff like this all over the country, and nobody comes. You sit on your computer all day, and nobody's going to come. But people have come from all over the country and different countries here, and was Common Grounds, did that come out of Hurricane Katrina?
Oh, yes. Common Ground came out of Hurricane Katrina. Scott Crow and I, we found the Common Ground on September the 5th. Of 05. So what you see that didn't happen, it happened since September the 5th of 05. Sharon Johnson, my partner, she had $30. I had $50. I had $20. So with $50 at my kitchen table, we sit and we found Common Ground. Then after we found it, we got on the phone, we got on the internet, and start contacting people we have been involved with in the course of our history within this struggle. I called just about everybody I had contacts with, and And the ones I didn't have contacts with, I called others and asked their contact. So it just threw that chain, you know. And the wonderful efforts of Scott and Brandon, you know, Brandon Darby. Get this, and the next thing you know, we went from 5 people to just about 20 in a week. And one day I was coming back from walking my dog, and I said, man, what in the world is going on? I came to the house, and it was about 60 people. You know, and ever since then, we have grown. Since September the 5th, we have had well over 7,000 or 8,000 volunteers. Just during spring break, we had, I believe, 2,800 or 2,700 volunteers.
We have been shown around to the different aspects of Common Grounds and are just amazed because, you know, there is just so much going on. It's a lot more about justice than about disaster relief.
Well, disasters, relief organizations basically deal with disasters. Natural or national disasters. But see, this wasn't a national or natural disaster. This was a natural disaster, but it was a national tragedy. And people came down because of the tragedy, because of the injustice. We didn't make a call just to those who believe in bringing relief. I made a call to those who stood for peace and justice to come down. You know, so, oh yes, our advocacy is paramount. I mean, when you have, I told you about what happened to Reverend Avery Alexander. So, I mean, the only time I saw such an event was in 63 or 64 in my life. And then in 05, when I saw African Americans being denied access into another parish simply because of the fact that they're African Americans coming from New Orleans. You know? And, you know, I couldn't, nothing in my history prepared me for the fact that here in a state of emergency, people fleeing for their lives, you know, in America, that one section of America will be denied access to another population of Americans simply because they have the wrong color.
It's very obvious that this isn't going to be a year or two. It's going to be a decade rebuilding and trying to wrench out of the system the injustice that it has done. It seems like there's going to be a lot of work for a lot of years.
Oh, yes. I figure that this is going to probably be the rebuilding of New Orleans will probably take somewhere between 10 and 12 years. You know, that's if New Orleans is ever rebuilt. Because first thing we have to do is start thinking smart. We got to stop thinking about making levees or preserving levees. We need to be thinking about preserving and the restoration of our wetlands. That's the first thing we need to do. And we need to be talking about really building a storm protection system, one that is not trying to control nature, but one that's trying to live within nature. And once we do that, then we could rebuild a city, a great city, a progressive city, and I believe one of the most progressive cities in the world. You know, I believe we have the opportunity here. We have the opportunity to break the shackles of fossil fuel dependency. That we need to look at this, we need to explore this, we need to encourage this, we need to implement this, you know. And no other city have this. We have an opportunity to turn this lemon into some real lemonade, you know. And I don't believe that we can do it unless the activist community, unless those who truly stand for peace and justice, wherever they are, you know, is coming and do the work. And that's what I see here. We had for spring break over 200 universities. That's 2,800 students came from over 200 universities. And also from 8 countries. You know, I mean, that then came down, answered our call, and came down, and they did a wonderful job. We got it out almost 300 homes. You know,
350.
Oh, so that's all right. Well, see, you know better than me. And, then we undid churches. We undid two enormous businesses here, and Coleman's, and now we are doing another one further down the street. You know, our clinic has been
medical clinic.
Oh yes, we have we operate 3 health clinics. You know, one have become a permanent health clinic. You know, I mean, and all this in 7 months. You know, and the only reason why this great phenomena have been able to happen is because you know, the greatness of the American people, not the government. I think we have a rich government, a powerful government, but I don't think we have a great government. But I know the greatness of the American people, you know, and those who really stand for peace and justice. You know, I mean, years after I'm dead and gone, you know, when people think about what happened in New Orleans, they're going to always think about the courage and the fortitude of those who have made such sacrifices to come down here and help in the rebuilding of New Orleans. I mean, we have done what the city refused to do, you know, and I'm not talking about the work. I'm talking about bringing people together. For the first time in the history of this city, you see whites in the Ninth Ward, in the lower Ninth Ward, working side by side, and in many cases working in the homes of blacks, trying to help them get their lives back in order. Just think what that's doing to undo the racism that exists here. I mean, when you see individuals that's in the Deep South, because I'm going to tell you, this is not someplace else. This is in, because I mean, during slavery, half the slaves that was brought into this country came straight through New Orleans. But now you're starting to see individuals coming in and breaking these edifices that we built to separate ourselves. You know, and they've done more for race relation. And they have offered hope. Our health clinic in Algiers, the first one, you know, started off as a first aid station. Now we are a full accredited health clinic. We hoping that one day that health clinic can blossom into a solidarity hospital. We have offered now health services for community that have been absent of health care for at least the 58 years I've been on this earth. You know, but now they have a permanent health clinic. I mean, the work that we're doing for stress reduction in a time in the most stressful period of American history. We're doing it. No one, I mean, nothing but the activist community. Not, when I say we, I don't just mean Common Ground. I mean the activist community that's period that is down here. Whether they're working for the People's Hurricane Relief Fund, SOS, or regardless of organization. You know, I mean, the great sacrifices that they are making for the stand of peace and justice going always, I mean, you can't ignore it. You can't ignore the positive change. You can't ignore that many of these communities, if those who have made that commitment was absent, then think of where New Orleans would be right now.
We're getting ready to start a press conference here, and I wanted to ask you one final question. Do you still feel young?
No. I know I'm an old guy. ain't nothing going to change it. But this is a press conference, and more than likely the press, I know the mainstream press probably will not come, you know, because they don't want to cover this. They don't want to cover this kind of stuff. That's why it came. That's why I told you I'd do this for you right now, because I know they never covered us. If they did, it was mostly in a negative way. You know, I mean, only ABC have given us any form of honest press. You know, I mean, out of the, you know, some of the mainstreams. You know, but I know I wouldn't cover it either. If I was an enemy of peace and justice, you know, but you know, for those who may come, you know, and those who may see what, you know, see what we are doing, you know, but most of them know, but those who would come, and which you'll see.